Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
It is 9:05, 9 degrees in downtown Montreal, and sitting in front of me is the one, the only, Walter Assey, president of Renovco, who's celebrating a birthday today.
Yes.
You turned 16?
I turned 16, that's correct.
You're looking good. You're looking good, Walter. I want to remind everyone for your questions for Walter, anything home improvement related, 514-800 is the text line, 514-790-0800. If you have concerns about any sort of project you've started, the texts are already coming in. Walter, George has a question. It says, my bathroom fan vents out of the side of the house. Should this vent with movable louvre or louvres have a screen?
Not necessarily. The kit usually comes with what we call the clapet in French. So it does open when it's venting out, and it automatically shuts off when it's not. You could, but you don't have to. Typically, you shouldn't have any problems with it. Especially that it's not put, it's put in a way that nothing can go in it, and this, because it's on the side of the house and there's a soffit usually that covers it. So as far as elements are concerned, I'm not that worried. As long as your exhaust is towards the outside and does not have a negative slope towards the inside. So if any water comes in, you might end up having it in the fan itself. But as an additional layer of security, if you want to put it, it doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. Okay, we've got Greg from NDG, right, Jimmy, on the line. He's calling in with low household water pressure. I feel like that's the worst. You're trying to take a shower and it's just a trickle.
Yeah,
that's what's happening. And this started about maybe 3-4 weeks ago. The water pressure in the house has never been that great. The house, it's a cottage, and it's the original the cast iron or the galvanized original plumbing system.
Okay.
from the 50s, and it's never been that strong over the years. I've been living here for many years, but it just dropped up to the point where I can have one faucet open, and if the washing machine, which is in the basement, if that's loading, so that's right near the entry, I can't use anything else. And I thought it could be the pipes, but I'm wondering if it's the source from the municipal water pressure, because the reason why I'm thinking it's not just the house is the first outlet in the plumbing is the spout for the garden hose. That's only about 6 feet from the entry, and even that's weak. Everything is uniformly weak. It's not like the upstairs is weak and the downstairs is strong. Wherever I try to access the water, it's uniformly weak. And I'm wondering if it's the pipes in the house or if it's the water pressure from the city. That's my main question.
Okay. So you've answered a couple of my questions. You're not on a well. You have the supply from the city, because when you say cottage, sometimes it gets tricky. So your supply is from the city, right?
Yeah. The house is in NDG. Yeah. It's a cottage, meaning the bedrooms are up
north. Oh, okay. I thought when you said it's a cottage up north.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's in NDG. All right.
Yeah.
So usually they might be actually lead pipes, not cast iron pipes. When it comes to the feed pipes in NDG, it's very common. That's number one. Number two, the size of the water entry pipe, is it 1/2 inch or 3/4 inch?
1/2 inch.
Okay. So that's one issue that you have right off the bat.
Mm.
1/2 inch is you're not helping yourself from the get-go. It doesn't hurt to call the city to check from their end if there's any issues. If there's no issues, then your issues are with the pipes themselves. You might want to look into seeing if you need to flush the pipes, because you could do that as well. and see if that helps. If not, you might want to start looking into upgrading to a 3/4 inch, especially that if they are lead pipes, there are subventions now that the city would pay to change the lead pipes. So if you're doing that and you're excavating from the outside, that would be a great time to do all of these types of upgrades.
Now, when you say the lead pipe, that's the section from the entry up to the municipal water supply.
That is correct. Yeah. So there are subventions for that. So you can inquire about that at the same time. And because you're going to be going through all of this, like, intrusive work, then that would be an awesome time to do your upgrade to 3/4 inch.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, start by calling the city, checking if they have any issues. They will send you public work. They'll look into it. And then from that point onwards, you could start going by elimination process. You call a plumber, you flush the pipes, you see what happens, and so on and so forth.
Does that help you out, Greg?
Yep.
All right. Have a happy Saturday. George is on the line. We won't get him just yet. So, George, stay on the line. We have a question here we have time to get to before traffic. It says, good morning, Walter. Happy birthday. Is there any way to prevent a steel roof from making so much noise when it's raining? Will rubber washers help? This is from Al from Roxborough.
That's a good question. There are... So not really, because, I mean, technically, the whole roof is made out of metal, so just the rubber washers are not going to be helping. There are different gauges of steel. To be quite frank, the higher the gauge, the better it is. When you have the lower gauges, it tends to have more echo when the rain hits it. So just be mindful of that when you are picking your metal roofs. But real quickly like that, I don't think there's anything I could recommend that will dampen the noise, no. Because itself, the issue that you have is you should not deform the original status of your roof. You should not, because for warranty purposes. So when you have a roof and you start applying things or modifying things or adding things, if you ever have a problem, the roofer can get out of his warranty just because you modified the installation.
Say that again. I think that's important. So explain
that. Usually when you install a roof, especially metal roof, they tell you it's a 50-year quote-unquote warranty. But any time you take the original condition from the manufacturer and you modify it by applying products on it or by modifying or adding things to it, that technically could be an exit for someone, if you ever have a problem, to tell you modified it from the its originality from the manufacturer, so now it's not under warranty anymore. So be very mindful of these things. In any ways, I don't know of any product to have to dampen the noise on the roof, to be quite frank with you. The only test that we've done is on the different gauges of metal, and we found that, you know, the higher the gauge, the better it is as far as noise is concerned.
And you're always telling me, Walter, that, you know, you should be careful and mindful when choosing the teams you work with, but roofers especially, you've said to me.
Yeah, because I mean it's one trade, if you wish, that will have minimal supervision from the homeowner.
That's who's true. You're not going up there.
Yeah, who's going to go up 50 feet or 40 feet and, you know, stand the whole day and looking at them work? You know, the other types you could evaluate when you are doing a bathroom, a kitchen, you're there, you know, you're looking at it. But when it comes to roofers, they have minimal supervision. Now, I have a trick for that. And one of the things you might do, because, I mean, still, a lot of the time, roofing is a big job, right? And it requires you to, especially if it's a flat roof or you're doing, you know, you have a big surface area. So a good practice would be to hire an independent roofing inspector to supervise the work for you.
It could cost you up front, but you're saying it could save you some money in the long term.
It costs you approximately, I can give you a range, anywhere between $1,000 to $2,000. But it might be the best $1,000 to $2,000 you've ever spent. Because you want that roof to last you 30, 40 years, right?
Right.
So they come at the demolition stage, they come midway, and then they come at the end. That's what's beautiful about it. And you know what? At least, you know, the roofer also would know that he's being supervised, so he's going to be counting his blessings every time he puts a shingle on.
Okay, the questions for Walter, 514-800 on our text line.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Welcome back, 920. We were talking steel roofs before the break and the noise that they make. And Walter suggested that you have someone supervising your roofing work. And then someone texted in, you can send up a drone. That's Sharon from LaSalle. But I think, Walter, you were saying that even if you're watching it with the drone, you have to know what you're looking out for.
You have to absolutely know what you're looking out for. I mean, a roofing inspector, it's all about how you staple the shingles, how you stagger the shingles. For example, when you install your flashings around the, you know, or your max vents, if it's a flat roof, how they're applying, what are they changing? Are they changing enough rotten roof decking? The tin test, is it wet? There's many, many different things.
You gotta know what you're looking out for, basically.
Yeah.
So the drone is great, but know what you're doing.
Yeah.
George is on the line from Park Extension. George has a problem with stonework cracking on the porch. George.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
Walter, I'd like to ask you, I have this problem that the stonework is cracking on the decorative stonework is cracking on the side of the porch wall. I'll give you a little background first. I had caulked the cracks on the in the slab. On the slab overhang, I've drawn beads so that the water doesn't go on the stonework. I have repaired it, but the last 2 years I've been noticing very, very marked deterioration. The joints are cracking. The stones are cracking. And I should also mention that some years ago, I brought a company to open holes so that the water will drain from the inside of the porch.
Okay. So what you're talking about is what we call in French the chanteplaire.
I beg your pardon?
You're saying that you have brought a company to put those chanteplaire at the bottom row?
Yes.
Holes. Okay. All right, so my question to you is, the decorative stone, does it go all the way up?
Yes.
Okay, so that's all, and you say decorative, right? Why are you saying that word?
From what I can see, it is decorative because the porch also has a side wall made of concrete.
Okay, but is it really, because decorative, we're going to just be careful with this. I have a couple of questions, and this is important. The installation of these stones, has it been done as a real stone, or it's those fake stone?
Real stone.
Real stones, okay. So the last row, first of all, the patio or the deck that you're talking about, is that in concrete or it's in wood?
You mean the porch?
The porch,
itself.
Yeah.
The concrete.
Concrete, okay. Do you know for a fact that the stone finishes right at that joint or it goes further down?
I'm not aware. Okay. I don't know, honestly.
All right, because there are a couple of issues. If this would have been poured at a later stage at a height of higher than the stone, then what's happening probably is even if you would have installed your vent holes at a certain level, the real level where the vent holes will help you are at the level where your foundation is. So the first row of stone. Anything that you do above that is honestly useless. Why? Because these, what's happening is probably the humidity that's coming from the mortar itself, it's coming into in between the wall, the exterior wall cavity. Mm-hmm. It goes all the way down to your foundation wall, and it tries to get out. And it doesn't. When it doesn't get out, the humidity or the water will build up in that area, and it will start deteriorating your stone. Now, you combine that with the accumulation of snow that is melting on the porch. And what happens is when the snow melts, it goes through the porous concrete and it finds its way again to compound the issue. So one way you can help is to ensure that in that particular area you have the least amount of snow accumulation to allow it to melt, to give it even more humidity and water that can go back in. The other way to investigate this is you look at the first row of stone further away from the porch to see if really where the stone ends. So the porch, let's say, is 16 feet, and then you have another 5 feet on the side that have no porch. That will give you the telltale sign on how low the stone was installed. And from there, you're going to have to start determining how to find a way to evacuate the water out.
Walter, I should mention that the vent holes, they're anywhere from 8 to 12 inches from the ground.
No, that's too high. From the ground or from the foundation wall? I don't care about the ground, to be honest with you. I care more about where your foundation wall meets your stone. That's really your... Because typically the right way to do it is you install a flashing on your foundation wall before you install your stone. And the flashing is installed on an angle that when the water hits it, it's really kind of herding the water to the hole so it can, or the humidity to the hole so it can get out. So what you want to look for is the level of the foundation where it's meeting your stone. And that should be the place where the vent holes should be done.
Oh, I see.
Does that help you out, George?
Yes, thank you very much. Oh, I'd like to ask...
go ahead.
Walter, would it help if I were to caulk the cracks?
Caulk the cracks. I mean, it will help in the sense that there will be no more water coming into these, especially in the winter. It doesn't hurt in the sense that you don't want it to go in the water and then freeze and then the deterioration of the stone will get worse. It doesn't hurt. You can also, what I would do is as well, your concrete, I know it's kind of a chronic issue that you're going to have, but don't be shy from chiseling the cracked concrete and redoing it. I know it's a hassle
well,
to do
done
it.
I've done it in 98.
Yeah.
But,
but every time it cracks, do it again. I know it's not a fun thing, but don't allow the mortar to crack and keep it that way, because that will create other weaknesses on the wall as well, especially that you're talking about the bottom part. There's a lot of weight in that area.
The mortar, this is what I'm going to change now. What is loose, I'm removing.
That is correct. So you grind
stones,
it down.
Everything I'm removing, but the deterioration continues. And I don't want to be stuck with having to redo the porch.
No. You don't. You probably won't have to. You have to zero in to what your issue is, and then we can look at solutions accordingly. Obviously the vent holes that you've done are not working, and in certain cases they might also be counterproductive, because if they are at a higher level where than the foundation, then what you're doing is just inviting even more water to come in through these holes, which is going to compound the problem more for you.
I see. Thanks, Walter.
Always a pleasure, George.
Thank you. That was George from Park Extension. Keep those calls coming in, 514.
We should have said Happy Easter to George as well.
I mean,
George and from Park Extension.
Well, he could be another George, but, you know, you're probably right. And there are a lot of Greeks in the building right now. So I should say, I got in trouble before. I said only Greek Easter. It's Orthodox.
Orthodox Easter, that's
Orthodox
correct.
Easter. Yeah. 514-790-0800 is the phone line to reach us, to reach Walter, to ask your home improvement questions. 514-800 is the text line. We've got a question coming up about a heat pump. We've got Lise on the phone from Beaconsfield. Lise, just wait a few tiny minutes because it's 9:29 and it is going to be time for your CTV News update.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Welcome back to the show, 9:35, I should say. A quick mention here, if you want to stay informed and up to date wherever you go, with the iHeartRadio app, this is possible. You get breaking news from CTV, up-to-the-minute traffic and weather, along with in-depth interviews, compelling conversations from all of your favorite shows here on CJAD 800, podcasts from Andrew Carter, The Big Five with Elias Makos, Bashi Capellos, Montreal Now, so much more, plus access to hundreds of other local, national, and international radio stations. It's all free. It's all at your fingertips. The iHeartRadio app downloaded today. My family, actually back home in Athens, is listening to us right now, Walter, on the app. 514-790-0800. Send your questions to Walter. 514-800 is the text line. We've got lots of calls coming in. We have Lise from Beaconsfield. Lise has a problem, Walter, with uneven heating. Lise, take it away.
Good morning. I live in a multi-level home, and we have a bedroom that is extremely cold in the winter and extremely hot in the summer. And the dining room below has the same issue. I've had people in for ventilation. I've changed the heat pump. I've had the airflow check. We changed the little flaps on the ventilation system. Nothing works.
Walter, what do you think?
About
her ventilation, her uneven heating. What do you think about this issue? So basically you were saying that there's a bedroom that's always cold.
In the winter,
yeah.
Extremely hot in the summer, and the dining room below has the same issue.
Okay.
We've had two or three different companies come in and try and solve the issue. I have a new heat pump. We changed the flaps on the ventilation system depending on the season. They've had the airflow check. Nothing's
working. Walter, what do you think?
Yeah, I didn't even realize we were back on the show.
So Walter,
she's asking me, what do you think? I'm like, think about what?
Walter's yeah. It's his birthday, and he's not actually turning 16. He's turning 50. Maybe he's starting to...
There you go. Oh,
Okay, Walter, what do we do with this uneven heating?
So here's the thing. I have a few questions to ask you before we actually get there. How big is the... Is it a cottage?
It's a split level.
Split level. Okay, so that's one answer that we can look at. Where is the furnace located vis-a-vis in the basement? Is it located to the left side of the house or right side of the house?
It's on the left side of the house, which is opposite the bedroom and dining room.
Okay. And the areas that are not getting the adequate airflow are on the
right-hand side.
That right-hand side. Okay. So that's one of the things we look at is the actual position of the furnace. Typically, you want the furnace to be as center as possible so it can evenly spread the air, the pressure-wise, you know, equal spread. So what might be one of the issues is that your spread is way too long.
It's way too what?
Too long. The pressure is not getting to the other side. Now, I'm going to give you a few things that you might look into.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that have to be done, believe it or not, by you and not the technician.
Okay.
Now, you said that they installed some levers on the ducts, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that only works by trial and error. Okay.
Correct.
So you have to be the one kind of trying different things because you can't call the technician every time. It's going to cost you a fortune. It's not really... So every like couple of weeks, try to change the setting and see what happens.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay.
So that's number one. Number two, you have to look at the size of the heat pump. Did anybody do any calculation to see if it's big enough for the square footage that you have?
It is. We actually upgraded to a bigger one.
Okay. And did the technician look at the size of the ducts?
Yes.
Okay, good. So this is already done. That's great. The dampers, that's fine. We talked about that. Now, one of the other things you might do is in the areas where you have good airflow and you don't need it, try to shut off these vents. Just close them completely because that will give you more pressure. That is right. So that's probably the best that you could do and the cheapest solution, really.
Lise, does that help you out?
Yes, it does. Thank you so much.
All right. That was Lise from Beaconsfield. We have Alex now. Alex is from Vaudreuil, and there's an issue with a steel brace reinforced garage. Alex, take it away.
That. Happy birthday.
Oh, thank you, Alex.
Sorry to both of you.
Hi.
Yeah, so we purchased a home back in 2006. It's a cottage-style home with an attached garage, and it's all manufactured stone facade. And the inspector pointed out something that he noticed, that the previous owners tried to cover up some cracks where the garage meets the home in the corner. And he mentioned that it was likely because the garage is shifting, the foundation is shifting, it's causing the cracking. He said you should really fix that before you try to patch up the cracks, or else it would happen again. And I've tried to reach out to a number of people, masonry people, and they don't seem to be either interested in trying to fix the problem, or they're not sure how to do that. And I just wanted your advice. When they say install a steel brace where the garage meets the home, do you know exactly what he's referring to? Like what kind of procedure that would be? What kind of, you know, tool or a part that he's referring to, so that I can more clearly describe? And if you have any recommendations for people who do that kind of work.
So first off, Alex, you're calling the wrong trade altogether. So that explains why nobody wants to come and do the job. Masons don't usually install steel braces or any structure braces for that matter. They don't have that training or the skill set or even the tools for that. What you need to call is metal companies, like steel contractors, right? If you're going to go with a steel brace type situation. Now, in certain cases, you don't even need to go necessarily to steel. You could do it with wood. But we have to understand where the weaknesses are and why is that garage foundation shifting beforehand. Because steel braces will help stabilize things, but we don't want that foundation to keep on moving or sinking for that matter. Have you inspected the foundation of the garage at all?
Yeah, so when the inspector was here, he did a whole home inspection, and he said it was normal for that kind of thing to happen, that there's natural shifting, and it also explained like a crack in the foundation of the garage, the floor. And he said that in this case, it's really just a matter of securing it so that it doesn't shift.
Okay, so a foundation that is, and I'm asking you that question again because just I want to make sure that this is what we're talking about. The foundation of the garage is shifting, and the inspector said that this is normal. Is that what I understand? Okay.
Yeah.
So my quick answer to you would be is that it's not normal. Okay. A foundation should not be shifting. You could have movement, that I'll give you, but shifting is a big word. It depends how much shifting we're talking about. Now, that could happen for many reasons. One of them is, like you mentioned, Alex, is a foundation crack. If the foundation crack is structural, then 100% you're going to have an issue with shifting foundations. So the first thing you want to do before you brace anything is fix a crack and make sure that it's stabilized. Then you could do any further steel bracing or anything like that that you need to have done, okay?
Okay.
But before that, I would start with the foundation itself, because the idea is not for me to just hold the house while the foundation is shifting. And don't forget, the foundation in the garage still have some load on it from the exterior walls.
Right.
Okay. So there is weight, and that weight is going to keep on putting pressure on that foundation, and it's going to create even further shifting. So you stabilize the foundation first, then you do the steel work.
Okay, perfect. So who did it? So it sounds like there's two trades.
Metal
well.
Workers. I mean, the foundation crack is you call foundation crack companies. Yeah. You could call Acton, for example.
Yeah.
We'll give them a free advertising. And then for the steel bracing, you can call any steel work company, Metalworks. They will do that.
Metalworks.
All right.
Or any structural contractor, for that matter.
Okay, perfect. Okay.
Thank you, Alex.
So much. I appreciate it.
That was Alex from Vaudreuil, 9:45 now.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
Welcome back. We've got lots of questions coming in on the text line, 514-800. We have one here. Well, we'll start with a compliment here. Hi, Walter. Happy birthday. Joe Colombo from Saint-Eustache. Your team has started the kitchen renos at my place this week, and I must say they are professional, courteous, and respectful, and I can't wait for the final product. Have a great weekend, huh?
Oh,
a compliment
you.
On your
Joe.
Birthday.
Yeah,
there you
that's,
go.
That's nice. Thank you, Joe.
Question here. Good morning, Walter. Can you recommend a battery backup for a sub pump that's not too expensive in case of power failure, and where can I purchase one?
I don't want to use the word not too expensive. I want to try to recommend a good pump because, you know, these are the ones that you don't want them to be cheap. You want them to be efficient. So one of the best rated ones would be the Bridia. You could even shop it through Amazon for that matter. The 1500 watt one. You have also the Watchdog. That's also the 33 model. That also have a very good rating as well. As far as longevity of the battery, because that's what you want it to last, and the pumping power as well. So that's 1/3 horsepower. Depending on the volume, if you live like, for example, by a lake and you have a very high water table and your sump pump is very active, then I would even go as far as half or even 3/4 of a horsepower, because you want that, especially in a like when you have a power failure. So unusually, when we have, unfortunately, the power failures, we have them usually during storms more often than not. So you need the firepower there. So if you have a higher horsepower, what's gonna happen is that you're going to stress your pump a lot less because, you know, it will pump the water at a much higher volume, so it's not going to work as much, so you're going to get a bit more shelf life from your battery as well. But the Bridia, the Watchdog, I know Mastercraft have a couple as well. You can buy them from any hardware store or even Amazon.
Okay, another question here. 514-800 is the text line. Great show. Thank you. I have a triplex built in the 80s. Mm-hmm. There's an outdoor storage under the front stairs. It's all cement and above ground. It gets musty in the summer. Should I vent it out? And if so, how?
Cold rooms. Cold rooms is probably one of the worst inventions. They, you know, we see them less and less in new construction now because it was understood that these things never bring anything but problems. If you have a cold room, the purpose of the cold room is to be a cold room, because a lot of people do the mistake of insulating it and putting drywall, and then they don't ventilate it properly, and you have all kind of mold and issues. So the musty smell you are smelling is more often than not mold related. The reason being is you don't have any air circulation there. So what you need to do is you need to drill holes on either side of the cold room, and preferably in a diagonal shape, in a diagonal form if you can. So just to kind of, so from either side, the left and the right side, you drill a couple of holes, and that will allow the air to circulate. And you don't plug these holes in the winter. You just make sure that you have a winter door. I mean, a door that is weatherproof. It could be an exterior door to get to it. It doesn't matter. So you don't get the cold from the cold room coming into your home. So that should be vented 12 months a year. So if okay.
Oh yeah. Okay, so now we have another text coming in. It says, hello, happy Orthodox Easter. Thank you. Happy birthday, Walter. There you go. I have a walk-in shower where the glass meets the wall. I've noticed water infiltration. It is 5 inches up from the baseboard. The water's completely dried between showering. Do I need to replace any or all of the gyprock wall? Will water seep through the old grout? I think this is the cause. I noticed discoloration on part of the grout inside the shower in the precise location of the leak.
Okay, so there's many different ways to answer this, but the first one I want to mention is if the glass door was not custom and it was purchased as one of these kits from hardware stores, more often than not, they're not really compatible as watertight. So you could have some water that could seep through the door itself. The grout itself, I don't see it so much of a problem if you're not missing a grout, because technically the shower should have been built with a membrane behind it. Don't make the mistake of assuming that the porcelain and the grout is what is making your shower watertight. That is a mistake, and if that's what the contractor is giving you, then change contractors. You need to have a membrane or a curdy board system backing, so it ensures that you don't have the material absorb behind the grout, absorb the water, and then create you a water damage.
Okay, we have another question here. I have a heat pump with oil furnace. Is upgrading to electric furnace an easy switch? Compatibles comes up a lot. What does this mean?
So when you are replacing one of the units, let's say you're keeping the heat pump and you're replacing the furnace or vice versa, you want to ensure that the two systems communicate well together. Not all systems, especially if you're changing brands, have that compatibility. And when you don't, you're going to have all kind of issues where because the furnace is not communicating well with your heat pump, then the furnace kicks in a lot more often and costs you a lot more money. Or the heat pump will kick in, would not give you adequate, if you want, comfort because of the lack of communication between the two. I always say try to stay within the same brand and make sure that the technicians do the testing, that everything is communicating well. Especially because even sometimes the same brand, if your heat pump is 15 or 20 years old and your furnace is recent, that also, although it's the same brand, it might not communicate well as well. So just make sure that the technicians are mindful of that and they look into that before they sell you the unit.
We have time for one last one here. It says, I would like to install a heat pump. I have a few questions. My question is about safety. My mom is in a road duplex, no exterior sidewall. The last consultant said I could put the inside unit above the patio glass doors. The molding would have to be cut. Is this a safe place to put it? Can it move with the vibration from the door's movements?
The inside unit. So this is a split system. I mean, I'm hoping that's the case. So the quick answer is no. You don't have a problem with that. It does not. It would not cause any issues at all. The way you want to look at this is more as far as efficiency is concerned. So wherever they are installing that unit, number one, you have enough clearance because these units are not small. So they have to do the calculation that you're not actually getting rid of a trim board above your patio door for the unit to fit, and then you have a design problem on your hand. The movement of the door does not stress me, so I don't think that should be an issue for you. That's number two. Number three would be just the placement of it, just in order for it to be efficient and give you what you need.
All right, Walter, this is okay, we were talking about this earlier. It's your birthday, and your wife has been plotting things. And so now it's time to reveal the big surprise here. Your wife has been texting me throughout the show. So guess what? You're going away. Cassandra and your kids, Jason, Jessica, and Julia, all wish you an amazing birthday weekend celebration. And this is where you're going. You're going to a 300-acre farm called Twin Farm in Vermont right after the show today. And when you're, I know you're going to react to the farm part. And she says, you always talking about wanting to buy some chickens and goats.
Oh my gosh.
So I think you're heading to some chickens and some goats. So Cassandra has a big plan for you. When I asked you what you were going to do today, you said, I'm just going to work out. No, you're not. Walter.
Oh my God.
You're going to a farm.
Okay, well.
Right now.
I'm going to a farm, I guess.
Okay, you're going to.
I'm going to go milk goats.
You come back next week and tell us all about that. That's it for us. I'll be back tomorrow morning, of course, with another edition of Weekends with Joanne Brakes, 9:59. Have a fantastic Saturday. There it is. Like when you're like, how you know, like, quick, the boss is sending email.